Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, middle of the week here on Super Bowl week. A different kind of Super Bowl week. We're getting used to different kind of things here in America. 2020/2021. Thank you for hanging out. If you want to give us a call, 855-212-4CBS. Twitter machine, Sports Writer, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. The executive producer, Tom DiBenedetto. Tommy Tai-Tai is over there. Mr. Alliteration, producer underscore Tom on Twitter. By the way, we are coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Rocket Mortgage is giving away millions during Super Bowl 55 with the Rocket Mortgage Super Bowl Square Sweepstakes. See rules and enter for free today at rocketmortgagesquares.com. The end of every show, we do buy or sell segment where Tom puts together a cluster of topics from around sports that perhaps we haven't hit in the hour and a half leading up to that. And we get a buy or a sell based on my perspective. And the other day I wrote my insurance agent, Troy, about some insurance stuff. And I asked a question about my insurance and he wrote back, "Bill, I would say that I buy that idea." And I thought he lost his brain. And I realized he listened to the show. Thanks, Troy. Appreciate you, buddy. People love that segment. All right, so between now and buy or sell, we're going to get into a really interesting matchup of Super Bowl 55. A significant one and a potential revenge matchup between Tom Brady and the Chiefs defensive coordinator, Steve Spagnuolo. Spags, who, and we'll play a clip on this, is beloved by his players. Do not overlook how significant that is, especially in that role on a football team. When you're asking grown men to suffer for you, among other things, but to the level of pain required, you have to have some personal affection. And Spags, the architect of one of Tom Brady's few waking nightmares in a playoff game, let alone a Super Bowl game, a Super Bowl. So we'll hit that here in a little bit. We will sneak in a little NBA talk with NBA power rankings. And I will hold my nose. I will swallow the bile and put a team in the top five that causes me physical pain to celebrate. But whatever, got to do what you got to do. I've also got what I think, and I'll give this to you in an hour. Andy Reid said something that made me think about this. There is a secret weapon for Patrick Mahomes that I think is not just overlooked in his greatness, but it may be overlooked historically for those players. He may be the most successful practitioner of this secret power in the history of all-time greats, or I think in his case would be all-time greats. I know he's not there. He can get there. We'll talk about that an hour from now. And we'll also get into Bruce Arians and the embrace of risk and how that relates to success and how it certainly has in Arians' career. But I want to start with the legacy showdown between Mahomes and Brady. And I am both sort of a paradox for me. I am, you can ask my wife, she's annoyed by it. I am obsessed with the idea of rankings and legacy and understanding greatness. I'm obsessed with it. And I recognize the trapdoors, the hurdles, the minefield of trying to grasp the history of something while you're in it. I don't want to miss the forest for the trees, but my own personal experience covering things has shown me how easy it is to be right in the moment and wrong in the long term. And it struck me how much Mahomes has at stake in this game, historically, at an early point of his career, but how easy it is to be right in the moment and wrong in the long term when Tony Romo, our colleague here at CBS Sports, obviously former quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, and not just that. I mean, let's give Tony a lot of credit here. I don't know if you can find, really in modern NFL broadcasting, a more astute Nostradamus, Romo-damus practitioner of what he does than that guy. You can think he's great. You can think he's not great. I think he's very, very good at what he does in terms of his work in the booth of CBS. But his ability to take the cerebral way that he played the game clearly and to see little things. He'll see a formation change coming out of halftime, and he'll know the adjustments a team has made. He'll call it out, and then those things will unfold. And so I think there's an astuteness to him that makes his perspective, his read on things, worthy of attention in a way that it wouldn't be others. And there's an honesty there. And this comment that he gave, Tony Romo gave, in making the rounds this week, right, talking about this game, his perspective on what this matchup for Patrick Mahomes means is really interesting stuff.
This is the biggest game Patrick Mahomes will ever play in for the rest of his career. It's the only way to catch Tom Brady. He has to win this game. If he loses this game, he cannot catch Tom Brady, in my opinion.
So it's a fascinating point. And it really, when I heard it, I was told about it, but when I heard it, it slapped me in the face. It got my attention. Because Mahomes, as ridiculously successful as he has been early in his career, right? Didn't play his first year other than a week 17, you know, opportunity against Denver. A game didn't matter. So putting that aside, year one, 50 touchdowns, right? And the MVP. Year two, Super Bowl win. Year three, this is it. He might win another one. And as I've said again and again and again and again, he might have won a Super Bowl in year one had the coin flip gone a different way against Tom Brady. And not just those facts, right, or the stats I could throw you. He has, in some ways, broken the game. I mean, the Chiefs have won 25 of 27 games, and even that is a little misleading because one of those losses came in week 17 of this year when Tom, I think, started, you know, that linebacker. I mean, they just put a bunch of randos out there. They have won 25 of 26 football games that they've tried to win. That is, and the one they lost was to the Raiders this year. Astounding. And none of that, I think, gives proper credence to the way that Mahomes has broken the game. He's broken the game. It is more like watching a video game in real life, in professional sports, than anything I've seen since Tiger Woods pre the breakup of his body and his marriage when he was just, they had to redo courses to stop him. But Mahomes has a long career ahead of him. I mean, Tom Brady is showing us what is possible physically. Not at the same age, but Peyton Manning showed us that you can win these things long after you're at your best. If you're talking about counting the numbers, if Mahomes has to get, let's say, to six, right? That's where Brady is right now. I mean, Tom Watson almost won the Open Championship across the pond at 59. Tiger won one a year and a half ago. Roger Federer is going to come back from another surgery, and who's to say he won't win another? He's at 20. There's a lot of examples of guys who can play for a long time. So I was trying to decide whether I agree with Tony Romo. Because it is true that Mahomes versus Brady, and again, it's you can be right in the moment, you can miss the long term. I don't know what's going to happen for Patrick Mahomes. Neither does Tony Romo. Neither do you. I don't even want to put these words in the universe, but they need to be said. You know, God willing, this won't be the case, but people do have injuries, right? Happens. On the other hand, Mahomes could lose this and win six of the next seven. I don't think that's going to happen, but it could go that way. It is, in some ways, if Mahomes can stay healthy, what we would have had if LeBron and MJ had met in an NBA Finals when they were both good enough to get their teams there. It is, in its own way, what would have happened if Jack, when Jack was 46 years old, Jack Nicklaus, and won that Masters against all odds, if he'd done it against or had been competing against a 22-year-old Tiger who has recalibrated how golf was played. That's exactly what the showdown is. However, it wouldn't change or alter, even if Jack got that win, what Tiger would become potentially. It wouldn't change or alter if Michael bested LeBron, what LeBron might do going forward. The reality is, unless we see Brady able to repeat what he did last year and the Chiefs to make it back, I mean, the odds that two teams are going to have a rematch in the Super Bowl in back-to-back years, that we're going to see Brady Mahomes next year, is infinitesimal. It could happen. It's highly unlikely. And so with all respect to Tony Romo, I'm going to agree to disagree. I don't think that this showdown is the most important game of Mahomes' career necessarily. It will be when it happens, but I think the reason that Tony Romo is making that statement is because we all expect Mahomes to have many, many more opportunities of greatness. No one believes, I know Tony Romo doesn't believe, that if Mahomes wins this thing and then puts on 100 pounds and becomes Jamarcus Russell, that he's the greatest QB of all time. That's not what anybody thinks. And I'll give you a personal example of how I've been wrong on this and how I've missed this before. When I was covering the NBA full-time, when that's all that I did, and I was doing it nationally coming off covering that Miami Heat team, I was at that NBA Finals, that fourth in a row for the Miami Heat where they played the Spurs. Now, they had lost their first attempt against the Dallas Mavericks in 2011. Then they'd won the next two against the Thunder and against the Spurs when the ball bounced to Ray Allen and he was able to hit a shot that changed the course of that game. And most people thought that the Heat were going to beat the Spurs again. The Spurs were a year older. Tim Duncan wasn't playing as many minutes. That Heat team had won two in a row. It felt like a team that was going to win three in a row. And we know the story. San Antonio wins that series. And I remember I had written a column the night before saying that if LeBron and the Heat didn't win that game, that showdown, LeBron would never pass Jordan and never be the best player of all time. I wrote a column that is very eerily similar to what Tony Romo just said. I said, you know, this is the most important game of LeBron's career, because if you can't even be 500 against Tim Duncan, who's the sixth or seventh or tenth best player of all time in the finals, you can't be better than 500, how can you be better than Jordan? And I happen to be, just by sheer coincidence, because the universe has a sense of humor and likes to push me toward uncomfortable confrontational situations, standing after the game next to one of LeBron's top lieutenants, top people, who knows me, I think likes me, question mark, has dinner with me, you know, offers up some access, often to berate me, but whatever, like that has value to someone in my position. And remember when LeBron tore off his shirt? I was standing there as he walked by, tearing off the shirt. I mean, and I remember thinking, oh, damn, that dude's going to Cleveland. It looked like a guy who was done with Miami. And the LeBron lieutenant turned to me. And they had a pained look on his face. And so I was trying, like, not to have a smile because I'd predict, right? Just, like, straight face. And he's like, yeah, I read your column, you're wrong. You'd be better than Jordan. And I remember thinking, the lady does protest too much. I nailed that one. I crushed it. That's just as right on as Tom Brady's washed up from a year earlier. I'm the man. I was wrong. LeBron lost that finals. He went on to lose finals against the Warriors, and he can still pass Jordan. I don't know if he will. It'll be debatable, but it's possible. I mean, I just had this talk with a guy the other day, an NBA employee, an NBA source executive, league official, whatever you want to call this person, team official, I should say, that if LeBron finishes his career as the guy with the most points in the history of the game and the third most assists, he might pass Jordan. If Patrick Mahomes finishes his career with four Super Bowl wins, makes seven of them, recalibrates and restructures how we view the Kansas City Chiefs, has more touchdowns by a mile than the next closest guy, has more passing yards by a mile than the next closest guy, puts up a couple more, like has a season where he throws 61 touchdowns and three interceptions, which I don't think is an unreasonable possibility. Remember, we're also going to add a game, so you're going to have like an inflated reality of stats. You have a Chiefs team that has all of these weapons, and they still have draft capital. They have, and if you get into this, it's pretty impressive, actually, the additions they made. Cornerback they brought in the fourth round last year, had three interceptions this year before getting injured. I mean, I could go through the whole list. They have random guys, guys that they drafted, second, third, fourth, fifth round picks that made contributions. The Chiefs are built right now to be a contender for a few years, and they draft better than most teams. They just have. That defense might get better. They might draft the next Tyreek Hill. They just drafted a running back with a 32nd pick overall in that draft, the last pick of the first round. There's a lot that Mahomes can do. It's a big game. It's a huge game. And it's certainly a game that will make it easier for Tony Romo or Bill Ryder or you, if Mahomes wins, to eventually say Mahomes is better. But you know what? Things aren't easy sometimes. Things are complicated. It isn't binary. It isn't black and white. This is not the game that makes Mahomes' career. It's just one of what are going to be 15 or 30 or 50 things that shape the nuances of that. Because to be Jordan or Tiger or Federer or Brady or maybe what Mahomes is going to be, it doesn't happen in a single moment. There is no David walking out with a slingshot and there's Goliath, and if I can cut his head off and save the world, then I'm the man. It happens moment after moment, contest after contest. It's a big one. It's not the only one. So Tony Romo's wrong. That's what was the point of that whole thing. Romo's wrong. Ryder's right. 855-212-4CBS. You want to give us a take? You want to weigh in on how big this is? If Mahomes has to win this game, by all means, 855-212-4CBS. Oh, also want to get into another important showdown. Not a legacy showdown, a practical one. Spags versus Brady next here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Ryder Than You podcast.
Richard in Myrtle Beach, what's going on, buddy? You're on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, buddy, I can tell you it's sunny, 40 degrees, and no snow, so I'm happy.
Nice.
And I love your taste in music. Two things. Brady, I don't like, but I respect him for what he's done in the league, okay? Mahomes is 18 years younger. He's going to do his own thing. He's not worrying about if he's got to win the Super Bowl and be considered a junior GOAT or what have you. He's well-grounded. He's going to take one game at a time and do the best he can. And when he does that, however it ends up, it's going to end up. I don't think he's worrying about what people are saying, and he's got to catch Brady and win in this Super Bowl.
Great call, Richard. I agree, man. You know, Tom made a point. I think it's a really astute one that Federer, when he beat Sampras when he was 19, and it helps, right? It's a great underscore, you know, highlight of his career. But, I mean, Federer's won 20. I don't even remember what Sampras won. That's how ridiculous these guys are. I think Sampras has 12 Grand Slam wins. Mahomes may just blow Brady out of the way. Maybe not. But it's way too soon to know. And here's another factor. Yeah, Mahomes may win this game. May win this game for the Chiefs. And that'll be a huge showdown. Again, reality, mano a mano. Tom versus Patrick. But Brady may also lose this game. And the Chiefs' defense may do some things against Tom Brady that are just as impactful as what Mahomes does. It's why I still haven't put the bet down, but want to tease to minus 15. You know, Andrew Bogut's putting down $2,000. I'm going to put down like $20. I'm thinking about doing it at like four, I think it's plus 470, almost 5-1. And that's because Spags, Mr. Spagnuolo, the defensive coordinator, was the architect of the most difficult night maybe of Brady's professional career. You go back to that 2007. Can't have been 2007. Whatever. That Super Bowl a long time ago. I think it was 2007. 17-14. Brady only completed 60% of his passes, got sacked five times. It was just a swarming attack and defense. And Spags got, look, The Chiefs defense is not a top 5 or 10 defense in the National Football League this year, but it's not a bottom three like it was last year. It's middling, which is frightening when you pair it with Patrick Mahomes. It also allows, and this fits in perfectly with Spags, and I think, again, you got to give Clark Hunt and the entire organization credit. They went out and they got it in Spags, a defensive coordinator, who takes a lot of risks and a lot of chances. Will err on the side sometimes of being a little too aggressive. We'll occasionally give up some big plays, but we'll make big plays. And that doesn't work in every situation, but it does with Mahomes. You have a margin for error. You give up a play here or there. You give up a big play here or there. Mahomes is going to answer for you. You make a big play, that game can be over because of what Mahomes can do. But here's something else. And we've got buy or sell ready, even though it's not on for an hour and a half, because I am so bad. One of the great ironies of my life is that I never thought I'd talk for a living. When you're a newspaper reporter, you write everything down in a notebook. I don't pronounce anybody's name properly. I can barely pronounce my name properly. It's Ryder. It's a shock I don't call myself Reader half the time like everybody else on the air. I cannot pronounce names, as you have and will notice. It's a real problem. So I hate it. And OC is great, the former defensive end for the Giants. But, like, I'm going to say his name before I throw to a clip, and Tom's going to judge me. Let's just pretend like I'm doing this without even, like, real cool. Yeah, so, you know, OC, Umanura.
Bye.
Oh, I'm not saying his name again. It will digress. By the end of the day, yeah, OC Umanyar. Yeah, I did it.
So.
Yeah. Umanura. Umanura,
bye.
Baby. Got on one of these Zooms with Spags, who obviously he played for when Spags was the defensive coordinator of the Giants and OC was there. OC Umanura, if you missed
Bye.
What I'm talking about. And I'm going to play it for you. It's cool. It's funny. But I think this level of affection for a defensive coordinator, which is rare, is important. Think about, you are a grown man playing defense in the National Football League. You have to do all the things that are asked of you. You have to put in the time and the effort and the work and focus on the game while you have a life and all that stuff. But on the defensive end, especially as a unit, especially for a guy like Spags, any coordinator that's a defensive coordinator, they're asking you for pain, actual blood, sweat, and tears. And a level of respect is the prerequisite, but affection is a huge catalyst, I think, for guys to buy in. And you hear that here from OC Umanura.
OC.
Well, what do we have here?
This is not right, OC. You're supposed to be putting pads on. You're not supposed to be on the other end of it.
Oh, microphone. Man. I know, man. Hey, Spags, how are you, man? You doing all right?
I'm doing great, man. Great hearing your voice.
Absolutely. Hey, listen, I'm not there to see you face to face, but we got to continue our tradition that me and Justin will always continue. And I got to ask you right now, you're not scared, are you, Spags?
No, we don't get scared. You know that. You guys used to tease me about that. That's okay. I took it every time. If it got us going, that was a good thing.
I'm always, always rooting for you, man. You know this, man. I love you to death. And I hope you guys win. You got Dave Merritt down there, Sam Madison, all my guys. So I'm really rooting for you guys. But also on Tampa Bay, we got JPP, who's a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
And I spoke to Tom Brady yesterday for the first time ever, and I kind of fell in love with him, Steve. So I'm kind of rooting for them too. So tell me what I need to do here, man. Give me some advice here, Steve.
You want me to try to steer you in the KC direction? Is that what you're looking for?
I just need to know.
Well, listen, I'm proud to be in the game, going against a guy like Tom Brady. And I think both teams feel like we're proud to be going against each other. I mean, it's two really good football teams, two great head coaches, you know, go on down the line with everything. And it'll be exciting. I mean, the competition is what we all thrive for. And there'll be a lot of competitors out there on the field this Sunday.
All right, so a few takeaways. One, Spags is awesome. Two, I love his accent. Three, is he the whisper phone? And four, OC, you can't be like, I love you, I'm rooting for you guys. Oh, good. But I love the other guys and I'm rooting for them. It doesn't work that way. I want a tie. There are no ties in the Super Bowl. Come on, man. That Chiefs defense is markedly improved from what it was last year. And I keep going back to something Brady Papinga told me 2 years ago when this show was on in the evenings here on CBS Sports Radio, how Spags defenses get better and better later into his tenure because of the complicated nature of what he asks and because of the how guys buy in the longer they're around him. And you heard that there from OC. It was really cool. And speaking of Umanura, I did it again. I'm on a roll, baby. Speaking of Umanura, thank you, Tom. talking to Tom Brady for the first time. I missed the actual exchange, Tom, but you just said something I thought was fascinating about just if you can walk the listener through it again.
Yeah, so when OC popped on Brady's call 2 days ago, there was this moment of, like, you hear OC's big personality. It was very similar. He came on loudly and laughing. And Tom was like kind of surprised, but there was this moment, this very fast flash of dread. And Brady looked great in this chat with the media, by the way. He's like glowing. He's tanned. He looked confident and calm. He was explaining how he's sleeping in his bed and eating his own food, and his family's left him alone. Like, he's in a great place, except for this one moment when OC popped on the call, and he even acknowledged in his response that, like, dude, you were a part of, like, the worst night of my life.
I love it. OC just, like, rattled Brady. Like, what are you doing on my Zoom? What are you doing here? Get out of my nightmares. Get out of my dreams. I had a weird Adam Klug dream last night, former producer of the show.
Wow.
I dreamed, I know, bogus this guy. I dreamed that the Kluger was at journalism school and had gotten in trouble with the dean who didn't like him. No word whether the dean's name was Andy, you know, bogus or whatever, but it was very weird. Very strange.
It's funny. I have much different Klug dreams at night, but, you know, you do you.
We all do. Hey, man, Klug haunts all those dreams. Bogus, you like that? You like that OC Umenior pronunciation?
Bye.
I was really impressed. I mean, you set it up as if we were going to get something like the Yukon territory. So I didn't know where we were going to end up. I was a little disappointed to not get something completely off the rails. But congrats to you for crushing that one.
Me pronouncing difficult names properly is kind of like most people doing an English accent. It might start well, but it ends in a whole different time zone, like a different part of the world. So we'll get there. It just, I'm riding it while I got it, Bogus.
Yeah, just keep saying it for me. For no reason. Just throw it out there every once in a
you
while.
And like maybe baby.
Tom can ring a bell. Bye. And you have to say it in that moment, and we'll see how bad it gets.
That won't work. OC is a lot easier. Oh, OC, yeah, got it. How you doing, Bogus?
I'm doing well. How are you? How's your tricky California weather? Everything okay out there today?
You know what? I'm glad you asked. I don't want to bring it up. Who wants to hear people complain about the weather? But it's been a tough morning. I woke up, and it was foggy outside, which wasn't cool. And then I walked outside, and it was cold. It was like down maybe 63 this morning, 61, I think.
Oof.
Yeah,
right.
And I didn't have a hoodie on. I lost my favorite NBA hoodie. I think I left it at a tennis court. I'm trying to find it. So I was cold, and then I got in the car, and I had to put the defroster on, which I don't know how to use because we don't use that here in L.A., so that was a challenge.
Once again, you are a true professional.
Thank you.
And, you know, I'm impressed that you're even at work right now after all of those hardships this morning, so kudos to you for showing up today.
I'll say this. I'm considering, I don't want to say pull a Stuart Kovacs because that sounds like I'm going to a club, but I can feel a cold coming on about 3 weeks from now. I may not be able to make it to work. I may call in sick tomorrow for February 25th is what I'm thinking.
That makes sense, but I also think that you could request a comp day for today, almost like a double pay for going through all of that to get in. You should be rewarded with a day off down the road to make up for the extra effort today.
An emotional comp day.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, exactly.
I'm glad we're talking about this. I'm getting a little emotional because it's been hard with the weather here. I feel, but you know, my birthday's in a couple weeks and it's on a
mine too
day. Are you the 25th?
Right. Yeah.
I'm the 26th. Oh, we got to have a little birthday celebration. What do you
Let's
want for your birthday
it.
On the show? What do you want? What do you have?
Coach K.
Let's go get him. Let's go get him.
Wait, Tom just grabbed the mouse. What are you going to do?
Arnold Bogus.
Quick email him?
I mean, look, I don't lie. I'm a big believer in not lying professionally or on the radio, but I'll make an exception for you. I will tell Coach K we've got some student amateur journalists who are easy to pick on, and it'll just, he'll be, I mean, it's just, that is,
he'll do a whole hour.
Chum. He'll do a whole hour. He'll come in. He'll be there. He will brave the virus, the Rona, just to experience that magic. All right, you want Coach K. Okay, anything else? I'm interested in this birthday, bogus birthday magic. What else are you looking for?
No, that's plenty. That's plenty.
Okay.
Or Dave Matthews, one of the two. No, no, I don't
want
to put too much on Tom's plate. Coach K or Dave Matthews, I'll take either
Arnold
one.
Arnold Bogus is as good a friend as I have.
I mean, that's true for all of us, to be honest. You're everyone's You're everyone's best friend, Bogus.
I'm America's friend.
You are America's friend. That's a, by the way, that is basically a Marvel line you just dropped there on accident. Look at you. You're a natural MCU adherent. Yeah.
All right. Well, we finished Iron Man last night, so we're chugging along.
How'd you like
it? This list. I've already seen Iron Man, so that wasn't new to me.
It's excellent, right? It's good. Really good.
It is. For some reason, more than the previous viewings, Robert Downey Jr.'s like goatee thing was bothering me. It seemed like extra douchey this time around. I don't know why. Like, it just needed to be like, it's on a 10. It just needed to be like at an 8, and it would have been a little more palatable.
A little. I think it's intended to be sort of, what was the word?
Right.
Douchey? Was that the word that you dropped there on the show?
Is that an okay word?
I mean, it is or it's douchey. I mean, either one. Like, I like it. Let's embrace it. I can say you manure. We can do whatever we want. The world's our oyster.
Bye.
Yeah, it is a little. To be fair, you have pretty strong beard game, and so it's like a tall guy judging a short guy.
Well, yeah. So I mean, I'm not judging the construction. I mean, I guess I kind of am. It just seems like too much. Like, I know what they're going for.
Blue?
No.
What are you
after? It didn't connect all the way on the sides here. It just was again. Mm. I know what they're going for, and I feel like they tried maybe too hard to give him the jerky goatee. They could have just scaled it back a little bit more and still gotten their point across.
Got it. You want him to be more manly and have the hair follicles grow in the patches, you know. You don't want him to look like
that's an easy thing to request, yeah.
A 40-year-old going on a 16-year-old, basically, is what you're trying to avoid. For good
old. He looked a little predator-ish, I don't think they wanted that.
Predator-ish?
This time around, it kept catching my eye. The whole movie is like, man, that goatee is a piece of work.
They can't, the good person, the folks listening can't see you, but you're also wearing all black over here, Johnny Cash. You are edgy today. And he's in all black with a different colored black left pocket thing. It's a good shirt, actually.
And I'm smoking.
And he's smoking. What he's smoking, we're not going to discuss. Do you want to do an update, or do you want to like talk about WandaVision? What are you feeling?
I think I'll do an update. We'll save WandaVision for hour two. Spread it out.
All right. You know what? We're gonna add a WandaVision power rankings so we can have its own thing. But update now. Is that cool?
It is. In a normal Super Bowl week, today is the day when teams truly hunker down and try to practice like normal. The Chiefs will still do that, but still are in KC. They and the Bucs have media obligations this afternoon, and most importantly, both are all good after another round of COVID testing. The NFL, by the way, has decided against cannon fire after the Bucs score on Sunday. Those cannons will be used for pregame introductions and postgame if Tampa Bay wins, but nothing in-game since this is supposed to be a neutral site game. Not Vince Carter or Tracy McGrady or DeMar DeRozan, Fred VanVleet owns the best game now in Raptors history.
Fred in the paint, catches the pass, scoops it up and in on a reverse, and Fred VanVleet with a new franchise record, 54 points.
He scored those 54 in a career-high 11 threes, a 123-108 win in Orlando. He broke the record that DeRozan held. The two spoke quickly last night, with DeRozan telling VanVleet it was about time he set the mark.
We've had that conversation a few times when I've had big games and I've had a chance to go for it. And in the past, I kind of shy away from being thirsty. So tonight, I just try to keep my foot on the gas.
The 54 points, by the way, the most an undrafted player has scored in NBA history. The Nets got 90 points from Kyrie, Durant, and Harden, including all of the points in a 13-0 fourth quarter run in a 124-120 win over the Clippers. LA had won 10 of 11. The Celtics were 111-107 winners at the Warriors. The Jazz won their ninth in a row at home, 117-105 over Detroit. And the Pacers snapped the Grizzlies' seven-game win streak, 134-116. Angels pitching coach Mickey Callaway now suspended while the team and MLB investigate the harassment allegations made by five female media members. Callaway apparently denying the allegation, so the investigation is necessary for the Angels to fire him for cause. The Twins reportedly re-signing DH Nelson Cruz for $13 million for the coming season, and the Padres extend GM AJ Preller through 2026 while adding President of Baseball Operations to his title. College hoops last night, number 2 Baylor dumped number 6 Texas in Austin 83-69, and number 8 Iowa beat Michigan State 84-78, but number 11 Tennessee fell at Ole Miss 52-50, and tonight's Louisville-Syracuse game postponed because of a COVID positive within the Cardinals. They're already in Syracuse. They don't know yet when they can head home. Bill, back to you.
Mr. Bogish, thank you, Andrew, on Twitter, at Andrew Bogish. We are going to get into NBA Power Rankings next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Some will rise. Others will fall. Let the ranking begin on Writer Than You's NBA Power Rankings. Number five.
I've got the Bucks dropping to five because a team that makes me want to just lay down and crawl into a little ball is on this list, but we'll get to them in a second. I still believe in the Bucks. I still think they're the most likely team to come out of the East because I think they're the best team in the East. They have really let up defensively this year, and I don't understand it because Giannis, defensive player of the year player, caliber player, Budenholzer, his teams usually play really good D. They're the best offense in the NBA. Not if you include the Nets over this, going back to, I think it's 11 or 12 game stretch with Harden going back to the 16th of January. But over the course of the season, Milwaukee has the best offense in the NBA. But defensively, they're just middle of the road. They also have the best net rating, which is a really important metric of excellence. They score more points per 100 possessions relative to their opponent than anybody else in the NBA. But some other teams, I think, have asserted themselves lately and are playing at a higher level.
Number four.
And for me, that includes the Clippers, even though they lost last night in a hard-fought game against the Nets. You know, the biggest concern for me, if I'm being honest, with the Clippers are twofold. One, the exact same issue I have with the Bucks, which is that they're almost exactly the same defensively. They're just mediocre defensively. But I have more confidence that that is going to can turn quickly. It didn't in the playoffs last year, but it can turn quickly with the Clippers because of the personnel that they have. But my biggest concern is Paul George. And I think we're going to do this in buy or sell. I don't want to cannibalize and take away the surprise of what Tom's going to unleash for us in that segment. But Paul George, man, like, I don't want to hear about the disrespect from the refs giving you one free throw. Maybe not. But every time I lost a tennis match yesterday against a guy that used to crush me and now we're pretty even, and I lost, 6-7, 7-6, 5-7 or something. It was really close. And he's a great player, an honest player. I should have beat him. I had him. I lost. And I was really conscious of coming off the court and shaking his hand and be like, great game, man. No, like, I should have beat you. I had you. And no, I mean, that is the sign of a loser. And I'm aware of that. When I act like that, I lose more. I don't take responsibility. Paul George sounds like a loser. Right or wrong. You can't do that. And it makes me worried about this Clippers team. That aside, Kawhi Leonard, when he plays, has the third best player efficiency rating in the NBA. It's at near, I mean, the guys ahead of him are Embiid and Jokic, who are almost at Giannis' level. Last year, Giannis had the highest PER in the history of the sport. And as I've talked about, player efficiency rating is not really a defensive metric. And Kawhi is still capable of playing really good defense when he wants to, kind of like LeBron. Doesn't do it all the time, but does it when necessary. Add all this up, I think the Clippers are so talented. I just have some concerns about their number two star.
Number three.
Do I have to? Brooklyn Nets. He mumbles. And to be fair, I thought they'd be better early on. I really did. But that win against the Clippers last night was really impressive. And here are the numbers. Here are the stats. Since Harden joined, there have been a limited number of games where Harden, Kyrie, and KD have played together. There have been a lot of games where they've just rested guys. They've had the chance to rest guys. Kyrie was out, obviously, in the beginning. They are 7-3 over that stretch. That's impressive. They have the best offensive rating in a short sample size, 10 games, but if you were to carry it over, in the history of the NBA. That is the best 10-game run in the history of the NBA offensively, and they have wins against the Clippers and Bucks, right? So, like, you're like, oh, hell yeah. That's an NBA championship team. I'm sure my friends and colleagues at WFAN every day on the radio are like, they're for real. Maybe. They've also got a loss to the Wizards. They've lost to the Cavaliers twice. They have, over that same 10-game stretch, a defensive rating, a defense that would be historically the worst of all time. And I've discussed this ad nauseum, probably too much. I'm interested in it. In this century, and really going back to Bird and Magic era, but certainly in this century, it has almost been impossible. It's happened a couple times. To win an NBA championship and not have a top 10 defense. And those examples, those exceptions, have some caveats there that are interesting. And I think we're talking about in detail when you have that. When you look at that, the worst defense in the NBA, it's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. And that's before you get into the potential corrosive effect of those three guys together. And maybe they'll go the other way. We saw last night how dynamic. I mean, James Harden was just the Eastern Conference Player of the Week. I mean, 3 weeks ago, he was the Krispy Kreme Player of the Week, right? Now he's the Eastern Conference Player of the Week. These things can change quickly. I'm aware. I get it.
Number two.
I really like Philly and the Sixers. And I'm so negative. Avery Johnson, coach, who I'm on with, and I think I'm on with tonight, late, 11:30-ish Eastern time tonight on CBS Sports HQ, likes to call me his friend Negative Bill. Maybe. But usually I'm accurate as well. I love the Sixers. I love what they're about. Joel Embiid is a beast. They've only lost two games when Embiid has played. They are an incredible defensive team. Doc Rivers has them playing at a higher level. They're shooting more threes. But Doc Rivers' teams tend to collapse in the postseason, and that was true of Philly even before Doc showed up. So I don't have the same level of confidence of a team like Philly or the Nets or the Clippers as I do the Bucks or a team that's not on here like the Celtics or some other teams. But credit where it's due, judge your team in the moment that we're in. The Sixers are playing really well. Embiid has been remarkably competitive. They are certainly coached at a much higher level in this regular season under Doc Rivers, and there's a reason they are atop the East.
Number one.
And there's the Lakers, the team that is probably going to win an NBA championship. It annoys me when people say, I don't care about the NBA regular season because they already know what's going to happen. No one says that about the NFL. I mean, literally, Tom Brady's in the Super Bowl just as often as LeBron is in the finals. Where's that? Huh? Well, NBA is stupid. Nobody plays defense. You're stupid because nobody wins without defense. But I get it. Like, it's LeBron, LeBron, LeBron. If the Lakers are healthy, and that means if LeBron and AD are healthy, they're going to win an NBA championship. They just are. And by the way, check out the column I wrote at CBSSports.com today, please, if you want to. A little bit along the lines of what we discussed yesterday, just there's this narrative growing why LeBron has to be the MVP. It's his. He's, anyone who thinks otherwise is wrong. A, it's February. B, half the people doing that are the ones that voted for Derrick Rose, that voted for Russell Westbrook. This whole residual guilt of past mistakes and MVP voting haunting the present and creating more mistakes that have to be made up for in 10 years, stop it. Stop it. LeBron's not the MVP right now. It's probably Embiid, maybe it's Jokic, but LeBron's in that conversation. He certainly is. And the Lakers are the best team in the NBA. All right, a couple quick ones.
Honorable mention.
Celtics, top 10 offensive and defense. They're amazing. Nice. They're just not winning games. Denver, little nice try. And last one.
It's okay.
Phoenix, I still like Phoenix. Number 5 defense. Offense isn't clicked yet. It will with Chris Paul. Still think they're going to be sneaky, sneaky good. My guy is CP3. I know, right? It's annoying. Just year after year praising that guy and saying, I know, a little sycophantic on my end. I'll get over it. Trust me. Krispy Kreme Player of the Week. James Harden. That's a new award that we've dished up. I've got a secret ingredient for Patrick Mahomes' success, and I think as it relates to this weapon, he's the most successful practitioner of it all time. Next on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, here we go. Happy Wednesday. Thanks for joining. We're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Rocket Mortgage is giving away millions during Super Bowl 55 with the Rocket Mortgage Super Bowl Squares sweepstakes. See rules and enter for free today at rocketmortgagesquares.com. Phone number 855-212-4CBS. Twitter for me, SportsWriter, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. You can listen on radio.com. Tom DiBenedetto, the executive producer underscore Tom. He will guide us through buy or sell at the end of this hour, at the end of the program. We'll hit a bunch of stuff from around sports that we haven't touched on or given the depth we wanted to over the course of the show at that point. In about 15 or 20 minutes, we'll see what we do. I want to talk about Bruce Arians and the value of risk. Andrew Bogish wants to talk about WandaVision. So that could really go either way. There are so many different ingredients, so many different paths to that rare level of greatness that defines all-time greats or near all-time greats. If you were to break down the personality traits, the focus and dedication, the obsession, the interpersonal skills, all the things that make Tom Brady, LeBron James, LeBron James, Michael Jordan, Michael Jordan, go through Mike Trout, Kevin Durant, all of these players. There's a different, and I think very unique set of factors that shape them as both competitors and as leaders. And in team sports, I think it's one of the really interesting things, that tensions that have to be navigated. And it's true not just in team sports, but in any ambitious activity where you have to rely on other people. But certainly team sports, I think, demonstrates it the most. Those that are great at the level that we're talking about, Tom Brady, LeBron James, Michael Jordan, are so ambitious, are so driven, sacrifice so much for their individual greatness that they are intolerant internally of the shortcomings of others. They just are. It's true for each of them in their own individual ways. And they become so great that they occupy a space, even in the rarefied air of professional sports locker rooms, that feels intimidating for the people to be around. I've talked to guys in the NBA about this fact with LeBron. I've talked to guys about Jordan. I've talked to people who play with Tom Brady. Everything feels normal, right? You get used to being a professional athlete. You're used to being a professional athlete. But apparently you never get used to playing and being near LeBron or Jordan or Brady. And likability, I think, is an interesting factor here because some guys lead without it. I don't think Jordan was, I mean, we know this now from that documentary, The Last Dance. Jordan wasn't beloved as much as he was feared. I mean, the guy started crying on camera talking about one of the things he sacrificed was being liked by the people that he wanted to be liked by in order for greatness. LeBron's not well liked by people. When LeBron messed up, and he messed up when he went to the Heat, it wasn't just the media that turned. That's the old narrative, right? Oh, the media is jealous. I covered that team. The players in the league loved it and hated LeBron. That jealousy, and not just jealousy. LeBron carries himself a certain way. The best explanation that I've been able to come up with for who LeBron James is Frank Sinatra. If you've ever read, it's a classic, but it's old. The classic story on Sinatra, Frank Sinatra has a cold, or you've read about Sinatra. That guy was his way of the highway in the Rat Pack. He was great as long as you understood, like, it was all about Sinatra. It's true for LeBron. So something Andy Reid said in this media week about Patrick Mahomes really struck me as, because everyone's always going to say how much they like these stars. That's what you say. I mean, seriously, have you ever sat in a conference room with a bunch of people at work and someone said, so there's a bunch of people there, people you don't trust. What do you think of the boss? Oh, I love the boss. He's the best. It's when people say that in private, they actually mean it with the few people they trust. I think Andy Reid said something about Mahomes that speaks to a very secret and important ingredient of Patrick Mahomes' success.
He's got a way about him where he understands people, and they are interested in things that he has to say or back.
This is real. So I've been very lucky and blessed and just fortunate in my life having interacted with a bunch of amazing people. And there's a very small group of people that I've met who had this overwhelming charisma that was it's a physical thing, right? The molecules in the air actually change when you enter their proximity. One of those people, the first person I ever interacted with this way was Prince Charles, of all people, the prince and future king of England. Met him as a reporter in London. And I'll tell you the truth, I saw him, it's a long story for a different time, but I was hanging out with Emma Thompson. I was like a young reporter for a gossip columnist. It was really fun. And from, I don't know, 100 yards away, right? Because Prince Charles walking in, he looked like a doofus. I feel bad because the crown humanizes him, and I feel bad. But he did. He looked like a doofus. And I was real smug. I mean, I was a poor, poorly dressed 20-year-old moron in London from Iowa. Like, didn't know what was going on. But I go, that guy's a loser. And then he came up and shook my hand and introduced himself. And it was just, like, overwhelmed by the charisma. I guess when you're bred to believe that God made you the king of a country, that's going to happen. The next person that I interacted with who had that was Bill Clinton. I covered him as a young reporter in Little Rock, Arkansas. It was overwhelming. LeBron doesn't have it. Tom Brady doesn't have it. John Hamm doesn't have it. I mean, I can go through the list of people. I mean, those are charming guys, but I'm talking about, I'm not exaggerating, I'm being literal, a physical change when you're around those guys. not at the same level, right? But Mahomes has a touch of it. I met him for the first time at Radio Row. It would have been this time, whatever, 3 years ago, whenever the Minnesota one was, when he had just gotten elevated, we didn't know what he was going to be. We knew on the show because Trez Paylor had told us, but most of the country didn't know. There's a charm there. There's a likability. One of the few guys I've met who has overwhelming swagger, but he's likable. And that matters in a leadership role. That is the hardest thing to pull off, and you cannot pull it off. You just can't in an authentic way if you don't have it. I was watching a TV show recently, and I was talking to Tom, and there were people on the TV show who are funny, and people like them, and they're successful, and they're big deals. And I said to Tom, what a bummer. Both those guys suck. Then in real life, these are just like bad guys. People know. People know. People that are around you know. Look, I don't want to pick on Tom Cruise. Maybe he's a great guy. But I would imagine people around him didn't need him to jump on Oprah's couch to have the eyebrows raised a time or two. People know who you are. I think Kyrie Irving not being able to deal with LeBron is a Kyrie Irving problem. That's a humility problem. But it does tell you something also about what LeBron's like to be around. I mean, I remember LeBron James socially ostracizing Chris Bosh during that Heat year to the point where Bosh started crying at a press conference over his lack of performance. And Bosh is one of the nicest guys that you're going to meet. Michael Jordan punched people in the face. He punched Steve Kerr in the face. He threw Scottie Pippen under the bus in The Last Dance. Jordan didn't have the phone number of his teammates. He had to reach out to the Bulls to get Steve Kerr's phone number. Have you ever heard people be like about Mike Trout on his team? That guy's a leader. He's not. Mike Trout is the wall that is next to you in your house. It has the same personality as your wall. Unless your wall is like a crazy color because your wife got down with some, you know, let's go evergreen green. Then your wall has more personality than Mike Trout. Kevin Durant doesn't have it. Kevin Durant can't be close friends with his teammates. He's too busy creating burner accounts to criticize them if they dare, like Steph Curry, have some success that they get celebrated for. In the pantheon of all-time greatness, there aren't a lot of guys who hit this place that are likable because it's hard to be that great and likable. It takes a charisma that's a physical gift. And the odds that you're going to have a Bill Clinton, I can't believe it's Prince Charles charisma, you know, that one in, I think it's 10 million, and the one in 10 million to be that talented, and then work hard enough and be fortunate enough that all comes together is rare. It's a huge part of why Mahomes is Mahomes. There's buy-in. I've talked about this. Travis Kelce, they love this guy. They respect him. They fear his talent. They want to ride with him, and that stuff matters. I mean, this dude's Braveheart. This dude is a made-up Hollywood version of Scottish independence. He's tough, he's strong, he's good-looking, he's fighting for his wife, and we love this dude! He's great! Hold! I'll hold, baby! I love you! That's Patrick Mahomes. The only guy that I can think of, and maybe I'm missing somebody, 855-212-4CBS, other than Braveheart, that I'm forgetting about, maybe Steph Curry. I think Steph has it, too. Now, I've been around Steph, and he doesn't have that charisma thing. But the first time I talked to the guy, I was like, why is this guy being so nice to me? What an incredible, I think he's just a nice guy. And Mahomes is too. Don't sleep on the power of that, on the power of likability. I have not had many bosses in my own life, right? The things that we can relate to, who were amazing and believed in me and gave me life-changing opportunities. And I loved as a human. There's one I can think of. I've had most of those combinations, right? I've had most of those combinations, and I've had maybe two. And then every boss that works at Entercom and CBS Sports Radio as well. It is a rare thing to find. It just is. And hearing Andy Reid talk, and by the way, Andy Reid is an interesting, probably enhancer of this, because Andy Reid is beloved, but could never win. And you better believe it's hard to separate, right? Did Reid make Mahomes? Did Mahomes make Reid? We're starting to get a picture with Belichick and Brady, but in the moment you can't, it's hard to know. And it's not 100%, it's not binary. It's not one or the other. But you got to believe, I do, that part of what makes Mahomes legendary is that he got Andy Reid over the hump with ease. With ease. Andy Reid's visionary offensive excellence, big part of Mahomes' success. By the way, don't ever doubt the importance of belief. Doesn't matter how talented you are, how gifted, how golden your arm. If people believe in you, you're going to believe in yourself. If they don't, they're not. See Tua. See Darnold. Now, I would say see Carson Wentz, but I worry that Carson Wentz spends a lot of his time in front of a mirror being like, you're so good looking. I think Wentz might be a little too into Wentz. You're so sexy. My God, Wentz! The Andy Reid likability factor and how it has been a perfect fit with Mahomes, that is a big part of leadership. It isn't and is not a prerequisite because it's hard to do. Nobody liked Kobe Bryant. Can we just be honest? People loved him after his career. And that's one of the, I think Kobe Bryant tells the tale, may he rest in peace. It turned out Kobe was incredibly kind and could connect with people on a human level and could be a mentor and could move people emotionally, but he couldn't do it when he played with you or competed against you. And I've never talked about this, but I have this theory that part of the reason Kobe found that version of himself post-career is because of his, it turned out, it was secret, his deep relationship with Michael Jordan, the advice Jordan gave him. Jordan's going to cry on camera, a very proud, macho man, about not having friends because he was too hard on people. You have to think, I think, that Michael Jordan said to Kobe Bryant, once you retire, reach out to people, connect with people. Find the thing in your career that you didn't have that I didn't find after my career that I should have. But Kobe tells the tale. It's hard to be the best and to be the best liked. It is. In every career, in every profession, jealousy runs rampant. And the things that are required to be great do not usually make people the most popular person in the room. That Mahomes can pull that off, I think, is a really overlooked factor in what he's about. Total buy-in. There are some, and I'll say this too. Andy Reid brings in some knuckleheads. He gives people second chances you normally wouldn't. Now, Tyreek Hill's massively talented. That is beyond doubt. But if you look at that football team, there's a lot of guys, offensively and defensively, who are not easy egos to manage. But somehow Mahomes doesn't just do it. They're all in. When you like someone in combination with respect, when you love someone in combination with awe at their talent, and it's rare, Steph Curry's the only other example I can think of. I don't think it applied to Magic Johnson. As much as there's an image of Magic, the beloved one, that was more complicated in reality. People couldn't stand Kareem. Bird was a really, really edgy dude. People hated Pete Rose. I mean, this list, Greg Maddux, you want to go to pitchers, was aloof and weird. My only Greg Maddux, and I had maybe 9 of these. Every time I interviewed that guy in spring training, he would just fart in my face, make fart jokes, and then sit there like Forrest Gump. It was weird. It's like, what are you, 9? I don't know what to write. I have a notebook somewhere of me just writing, he farted again. He like wouldn't say anything. So I don't know that connects on the level it's supposed to. Kershaw's beloved in L.A., and he's an amazing talent, and he got a World Series. I'm telling you this. He's not the most popular guy on the face of the earth. He would not win a blind popularity contest in that Dodgers locker. I guess Jeter, maybe Jeter is on this list, but he didn't get along with A-Rod, right? I mean, Mahomes gets along with everybody. And Jeter may have had good reason not to get along with Alex Rodriguez, but A-Rod was an important part of that team. And Jeter was a part of the reason A-Rod was socially isolated. That's not good for the clubhouse. It's a rare gift. Steph Curry did for Kevin Durant what Jeter didn't do for A-Rod. And by the way, I couldn't do it. I'm not built that way. Like Steph, I don't have any charm, but if I did, I still couldn't do it just out of pride and just not having given zero. 2020 did a lot of things for me, but it took an occasional inability to give any Fs. To just, I don't give it anymore. I'm just like 0 to 100 immediately. You want to fight? No, man. Sorry. Bumped into you. I'm a little guy. I think that's a big point of Mahomes' success, and I think it's worth not just watching, I think it's worth celebrating. Good guys don't usually finish first. Great guys don't usually finish first, especially in these endeavors. And Mahomes is doing it, and that's a big part of the reason I am going to be rooting for this dude. All right, 855-212-4CBS. From the value of likability to the value of risk, Bruce Arians tells the tale next here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
We have a request to tell the full Prince Charles story. Maybe we'll do tomorrow. We want to, like, should we build toward tomorrow? An American farm boy. I wasn't really a farm boy, but close. In London, kind of a story. It also involves a model who mistook me for, I think, an oil heir. And an eventual quip from Joan Collins about my tawdry interactions with Emma Thompson. It's a whole thing. And me lying to Emma Thompson about what I did for a living, how old I was. It's a whole enchilada all to itself, Tom.
Tune in tomorrow, folks.
We'll do it at one of the 20s. Bill Ryder's Prince Charles. All true, by the way. I have a weird life. So I'm a big believer in taking risks. I think that just as a human being, I think there's something really rewarding and exciting in a healthy way at feeling alive, right? Feeling nervous, taking chances, betting on yourself. And not betting on yourself because life is some kind of fairy tale where it always comes true, but because it often doesn't. That the risk means you're going to fail, and the willingness to embrace failure means when you succeed, you can do it in a way that others can't. I think that applies to careers. I think it applies to relationships. I think it applies to life experiences. And I think it applies to football. And Bruce Arians made me think about this, although it doesn't just apply to Arians. I mean, certainly they took a risk on Tom Brady. But think about the Chiefs. Think about how much value picks have in the National Football League. And now you look back and you say, of course the Chiefs were going to draft Patrick Mahomes, best of all time. But in that draft where the Chiefs went up and got Mahomes, I always get it wrong. He was 10, I think, and Watson was 12. They traded up to get Mahomes when they had an Alex Smith, a quarterback, who was a number one former overall pick. And if you got into the data, was really effective, successful, good, really a winning quarterback. That is a risk, man. And I mean, after they got done laughing so hard that their stomach hurt because the Bears are taking Trubisky, they had to also then look past Deshaun Watson. So you had the fear of Watson and just the pain of the bellyache at laughing at the Bears for being stupid enough to take Mitchell Trubisky. Risk is a critical part of success. And Arians, the head coach, obviously, for the Bucs, I thought talked about this in a really candid way during availability this week.
You're not guaranteed the next day. I hit a lot of balls in the water going for it in two, knowing I can't get there, but I ain't going to get there unless I try. And that 1 out of 10 that makes it, it's a great feeling. And that's how I live life.
No risk it, no biscuit, baby. I'm not a big Arians fan. I've been honest about that. I don't appreciate the way in which people in his position are able to call media members liars with no repercussions. But if we were to do the same thing in reverse, there would be repercussions. It is what it is, but I don't have to respect people who do that. And the story is Arians, someone broke the fact Arians was going to leave Arizona. He called that person a liar week after week after week after week, and then went into the media after that report turned out to be true. But that does make, that clip makes me like him as much as I have in a long time, because basically Bruce Arians is tin cup. Bruce Arians is the tin cup of the NFL. I need to start going for it more. To be honest, I do go for it, and it just looks like I laid up because I just totally chunk my 3-wood from 180. Yeah, 3-wood from 180. Don't judge me. And it just goes right before the water. Hey, nice layup. Thanks. Even my failures suck. That's why I play tennis and not golf. And that's how the Bucs are going to have to win the Super Bowl. So it's one thing for Arians to say it. It's another thing to do it under the pressure and the lights and the eyeballs and the moment of a Super Bowl. Only one team has beaten the Chiefs in the last 26 games when the Chiefs have been fielding a full team. That team is the Raiders. How did they do it? Risk. Gruden just aired it out. Was like, you know what? We're going to have to go for it. We're going to have to throw the ball deep. We're going to have to be aggressive. We're going to have to close our eyes and pretend that we can fight Mahomes possession for possession. That is, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers cannot and will not win this football game coming out, and we got to establish the run, and we got to control the clock, get into rhythm. You're not going to win. It's not going to work. It's not going to be successful. You have to air the ball out with Tom Brady. You have to take risks. You have to hope he's the version of himself that threw three touchdown passes against the Packers and not the version of himself that had three picks. You have to. So we'll see. It's easy for me to sit there and tell you that risk is everything. It's easy for Arians to sit there and say that because he goes for it in a golf match, it doesn't matter. It's everything. But he's right. They have a 1 out of 10 chance to win this thing. Just like apparently Bruce has a 1 out of 10 chance when he goes for the green and 2 to get up there. It feels real good when you do it. Risk is going to be the only solution for success for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And that's going to be true on defense too, but my God, good luck. I'm going to throw in luck. It's going to be risk and luck. Because I think you've got to get to Mahomes. You've got to try. I mean, I know that the approach is to drop back in the zone and to try and force Mahomes into some mistakes and that he is maybe the best QB we've ever seen under pressure. He is. Like, when you go after Mahomes, they destroy you. Doesn't matter. You're going to have to take calculated risks on the defensive side, too, for Tampa Bay because you're not as good of a – you're just not as good a team. It's like poker. I'm not as good a poker player as my brother, which pains me to say because I used to be. So when I play him heads up online, which is a lot for, you know, little money, but it's pride, I'm going all in a lot of the time. I have ace king. I want all the chips because I'll take 50%. The Bucs don't have a 50% chance of beating the Chiefs. I don't think they have a 20% chance. So you got a risk that's maybe 35, 40%, but it pays big dividends. You go for it. You have to be aggressive. Just like Andrew Bogut is in his criticisms of Tony Stark's goatee and his warm embrace of WandaVision. Which what did have a good episode. I think like WandaVision has 4 episodes, 3 of them suck and subtract from the sum of all human joy. One of them's finally good, and I'm supposed to apologize? How about the director apologizes to me for the first 3 episodes, Bogut?
No, I think 1 out of 4 is a really good success rate. I think you should just, and they're clearly building. So, because the last one is the best one so far. So 5, 6, and 7, here we go. Just sit back and enjoy.
Well, based on this rate, those are going to be Donna Reed again. They're going to be terrible. And then I'll have to apologize when episode 9 is vaguely entertaining.
I think you just need to let them all come out, see them as they're meant to be seen, as a full body of cinematic work, and then go from there.
I got it. You're much more... This is why Coach K loves you. You're reasonable. I'm angry.
Yeah,
I'm angry at... Who is this director? I'm supposed to apologize to him. By the way, what kind of a doldrums are we in the whole cycle of TV in this golden age when WandaVision's worth talking about? Normally, we just turn it off. There's nothing to... I'm watching Grimm, for crying out loud. I'm watching the final season of Grimm. Do you guys even know what Grimm is?
I do not.
Do you know what it is, Bogut?
I mean, I've heard of it before, but I don't know who's in it.
Yeah, Nick Burkhardt's the main character. I don't know any of the actors' names, but basically he can see monsters, and he's related to the Grimm storytellers because it's all true, and there's magic. It's good, but...
Is it real scary?
It can be a little scary. I mean, it's scary, too scary for my kids to watch, but it's what you watch when otherwise you have to watch WandaVision. I mean, that's... That's what it is.
Was there like a big jump forward in time, or is it just somebody who has no idea what's going on in the Marvel Universe or WandaVision? What is the thing about this 4th episode, out of curiosity, that has raised its level so much?
So the first 3 is a black and white sitcom TV show that's stupid and dumb and doesn't make any sense. And then the 4th one, they finally like, here's what's really going on. Here's outside the wall. Here's,
I see.
Like, yeah, all the stuff that I needed 3 episodes to get to this. You know, like, all right, so I'm going to get... Can I get highfalutin, Bogut? Can I get highfalutin?
Please.
Yes.
The Grapes of Wrath is one of the great books of all time, and Steinbeck wrote this amazing opening, and every other chapter is a description of the scenery of where the characters were at that time. If memory serves, the opening scene's like a turtle, and it's crossing, and it's a dust bowl. It's really good. It's beautiful. It was like, I don't remember how long, 5 pages? I don't need 90 pages of the turtle. The 5 pages of the turtle are fine. The setup is fine. You want to be artistic? That's fine. I don't need 90 pages of it. By page 82, I'd be like, I get it. It's a turtle, and the dust is blowing. Same thing for WandaVision. Give me 5 minutes of, ooh, black and white, I'm Donna Reed. I'm in, cool. Got the concept. Hey, random director who owes me an apology from WandaVision. We're not stupid. I'm not dumb. I don't need 3. I don't think they get it yet. Let's do a 3rd episode. I'm real angry about this.
It's funny because people have the same criticism of Better Call Saul. Better Call Saul does like these big visual like metaphors sometimes, but they're like 6 minutes long sometimes. And people say that it's excruciating, agony, like whatever. Good. You want to make a point about the ants crawling on the ice cream. Like, fine. We get it in 90 seconds. We don't need 6 minutes of it. And this is three episodes. So this is that turned all the way to the max. And people people say Better Call Saul is unwatchable because of these visual metaphors.
The first season of Better Call Saul was a metaphor. I was just like,
not great.
I couldn't get through it. I know it's amazing now. I've heard.
Got much better.
Just, hey, the brother is in tinfoil. Can we please skip to something happening?
Yeah, that's totally fair criticism.
But look at the payoff. Because Call Saul is finishing strong. And I think the problem is you don't know what you don't need yet. As we get deeper in these episodes, you're going to go, oh, now I get episode number two. Oh, episode three. Now I see. Okay.
Put me on the chair, Dr. Bogus. Dr. Bogus, heal the pain. Wait, what did you just say? You don't know what you don't know. Wait, what was that? It was really good. It was deep.
I think I said, yeah, you don't know what you don't know or something like that. Or what don't
you
need.
You don't know what you need. Yeah, I do. To turn WandaVision off or get an apology from that director. That's what I need, Bogus.
Dr. You know Bogus, what? America's friend. He's got two new nicknames today.
Dr. Bogus. You know what WandaVision is doing? You know what the director of WandaVision is doing? He's treating all of America the way your buddy Coach K treated that student athlete. With condescension. I get it. I got it.
Arnold Bogus.
I love it. I mean, you know this guy.
But we've discussed this. I mean, Coach K was right, so maybe the WandaVision director is right here, too.
Wow. Wow, Dr. Bogus. Whatever you're prescribing for yourself.
It's not my Jake Piazza disclaimer. This is not real, Jake.
Jake, we're sorry.
We're sorry. If you need help, email me.
Yeah, Dr. Bogus will put you on the couch. Unfortunately, the cure, Jake, is... Jake, the cure is watch WandaVision, so...
Tread carefully.
Oh, it's so bad. I love talking to you, but updates are good, but I feel like they interrupt the hanging time. You know what I'm saying? It's selfish, but
I would agree.
News.
Yeah. But I should probably do it.
Do you want
so
to?
Here we go.
Do you think if you didn't do it, do you think we'd get a, what do you think would happen?
Nothing, because there is nothing for me to read on a business front in this one. There's no sponsor, nothing like that. So, I mean, it goes off into the ether and then that's it.
So, it's like this isn't brought to us by, say, WandaVision.
It is not. No.
Got it. Okay.
It's brought to us by me at the moment and that's it. Just a solo effort.
It's enough for me, Drew.
2 days after blowing a 5-point lead with 9 seconds left, the Nets held off the Clippers last night for a 124-120 win in Brooklyn. At one point, Durant, Irving, and Harden scored all the points in a 13-0 fourth quarter run. They scored 90 total, 28 of them from KD.
We got three guys that are unselfish, that know how to play. And we made the right plays down the stretch, especially Kyrie and James.
Kyrie scored a season-high 39. Harden had 23 with 11 rebounds and 14 assists. Now, we're not supposed to mention that Paul George only took one free throw last night, but...
I absolutely think it was disrespectful. I had one free throw attempt today. I'm going to leave it at
that.
Can't
disrespect Paul George. His Clippers had won 10 of 11. The Jazz jumping them for the moment for best record. Utah 16-5 after downing the Pistons 117-105. Portland won in Washington 132-121. Memphis's 7-game win streak ended in Indy 134-116. And the Raptors beat the Magic 123-108 as Fred VanVleet scored a franchise record 54 points. He's also the first guard since MJ in 87 to have 3 steals and 3 blocks in a 50-point game. In non-Super Bowl news, Sean Payton told NFL Network this morning the Saints have, quote, big interest in re-signing Jameis Winston. Obviously, we're waiting on Drew Brees, and New Orleans has already paid Taysom Hill. It is National Signing Day in college football. Cornerback Avante Dickerson, a top 50 recruit, is committing to Oregon. He decommitted from Minnesota back in December. The Anaheim Angels have suspended pitching coach Mickey Callaway, with 5 female media members accusing him of harassing texts and emails. The team apparently wanted to best investigation into the matter complete by spring training, which begins in 2 weeks. College Hoops, number 23, Kansas, trying to right the ship.
3 seconds to get it across the midcourt stripe. They just barely do. Now Brown, left unguarded for three. Bullseye! Christian Brown from the corner. What a bounce back game for
Brown.
Ryan
Haney from Learfield IMG College. Brown and David McCormick each scored 18 in a 74-51 win over K-State. The Jayhawks had dropped 4 of 5. And over 500 players, officials, and staff are isolating right now in Melbourne because a worker at one of the hotels the Australian Open is using for quarantine has tested positive for COVID. All involved can leave isolation after one negative test. Bill, back to you.
Bogus, I noticed that we didn't have an update on the fact Barca's playing Granada in the Copa del Rey in about 2.5 hours. Is that just because it's going to dominate the rest of the updates going forward?
Yeah, I wanted to save that for a little closer to kickoff. I didn't want to get people too hyped up for it, but I'll probably lead at 12:30 Eastern on Jim Rome's show with that. In fact, I might interrupt Jim to get him a live update for kickoff. We'll see.
I think that makes sense to my sort of radio instincts.
Right.
Do you want to buy or sell this, or truth or bogus this? Would you say that the contract situation for Barcelona's star has gotten messy?
I'll buy.
Thank you. Been sitting on that one.
I did a sports minute on that. I should have used that. Well, she said it earlier in the week. I would have stolen it from you.
You did a sports minute on, what was your take on the Messi thing?
Just like how crazy soccer is, that it completely dwarfs all of our nonsense here. I mean, what he made and the fact that he's so upset that it got out that he's suing people, where here we know everything about every contract and we can't know what Messi's making, and he's so embarrassed by it that he's going to sue people. And Barcelona had to say, it was not us. I promise we did not let this out. It's amazing.
There's only 5 people apparently that likely had access to it. It's
I saw 4.
There's a 5th now, so there's, I don't remember. It's going to get real. Oh, like 5 people within Barcelona, right? So it's within.
Okay.
If Barcelona did it, there's 5 individuals who had access to the contract, and Messi is opening a criminal investigation of all of them.
Right. Another. So him, his lawyer, the league, and the team as a whole are the only 4 entities that could see the paperwork.
Right.
So it's not hard. I mean, it's not hard to find out where it might have come from.
It's gonna be messy. I did it again. I did it again.
Bye.
It does work. Bogus, this was fun. Good stuff.
We'll do it tomorrow.
All right, I'll see you tomorrow.
Sounds good.
Pretty excited. Andrew Cash, Drew Bogus over there. I need to wear more all black. It looks good. Although for all I know, Bogus is wearing boxers. I don't know what's. I was doing a TV hit on CBS Sports HQ, and Tim Doyle like pulled up his bare feet on a live hit. I was in bare feet, but I wasn't going to show my toes. What's going on in the world? All right, 855-212-4CBS. What's going on in the show? It's a fair question. I got thrown by WandaVision is my only answer. 855-212-4CBS. Let's do buy or sell next year on CBS Sports Radio.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
They have Krispy Kreme donuts out east.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they just built some kind of very unique factory in Jersey City, like walking distance from my apartment. That's a huge deal. People still line up outside of every morning.
Like, they have the Hot Now sign still?
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess they're a factory that then supplies other places. I don't know. I'm not a big Krispy Kreme guy, but...
They opened one in Des Moines, I don't know, when I was there 15 years ago, and it was just life-changing. Lori and I once got 12 Krispy Kreme donuts Hot Now. And when we got home, they were gone, and she was angry with me. I ate 12 in the car.
Holy smokes. That's a nice donut session right there.
I pulled a Harden.
You know what? I'm going to give that Krispy Kreme
bye.
Thank you.
Player of the month a bye. Nolan Arenado was introduced as a St. Louis Cardinal yesterday, and he got right to the point about what he's looking for in St. Louis and why it didn't match with the direction of the Rockies.
As a kid, you dream of winning World Series, and that is still the dream now. And to join this organization that... You know, they care about winning and they want to get things done. It's really exciting. You know, they're always competitive, and that's something that, you know, got my attention.
Buy or sell, Arenado gets a World Series in St. Louis.
Gets to one or wins one?
Let's say wins one.
I mean, that's so hard to do for any individual team. But as a Cubs fan, I'm worried that they will. I'm going to buy it, actually.
Buy! Wow.
I think it's an incredibly run organization that gets the best in its players. And the Cubs are in a rebuilding mode. They're not going to be competitive. That is a huge opening for the Cardinals. And the Cardinals are the kind of team, they make the playoffs. They can make those kind of runs. Unfortunately, I think it's certainly in the realm of what's reasonable.
So the Clippers fell to the Nets last night, 124-120. The Nets went to the free throw line 26 times. The Clippers only 17, which is only one more time than Durant, Irving, and Harden combined, who went 16-for-16 from the line, by the way. Paul George had comments about that after the game. He said, quote, "I think it was disrespectful that I had one free throw attempt today, and I'm going to leave it at that," end quote. Buy or sell, Paul George was disrespected by the refs last night.
No.
Sell.
I'm going to leave it at that. Maybe he should have left it at that 10 seconds ago. I think that the right thing for him to have said, and again, I think it speaks to a problem with Paul George. Why is he the one that's disrespected? Why can't the team be disrespected? Why can't it be we were disrespected? We should have gotten to the line more. I had, as an example, I only had one free throw. We had a lot more than the Nets. Why is it a Paul George problem? Did I miss something? Is basketball now a individual sport played with one guy? Do I need to rethink my entire career strategy? That's my problem with that comment. How hard is it to just be self-aware enough, even if you are self-absorbed, just pretend? Yeah, we, wink, wink, didn't get respected. All of us. I don't love it.
Fred VanVleet had a career night in the Raptors' 123-108 win over the Magic. His 54-point performance was also the highest scoring game in the history of the franchise and the highest scoring game for an undrafted player in NBA history. Fred's had an up-and-down year so far, as have the Raptors as a whole. They've underwhelmed pretty severely to this point, frankly. But this could be a turning point. Buy or sell, Fred VanVleet can carry the Raptors to a top six seed.
Tom, I'm going to give you an answer. I'm going to pull Paul George. I'm going to give you an answer based solely on self-absorption and just what I want to be true. I'm going to sell that.
Sell.
Because one of my bold predictions this year was the Hawks would be a top six team. Everybody mocked me for it. By everybody, I mean my colleagues. It's okay. Love you guys. CBSSports.com. We don't all have to agree. And they're hanging on at 10-10 right now in that slot. And I need the Raptors not to make a run. So I'm just going to hope that the answer is no. But VanVleet, I mean, he is a competitor, and he's been really, really good. He may be great for a long time. That was an incredible performance. It really was amazing. Problem is they need, not 50, but they need 30 from that guy. They don't have enough offense. And obviously he's capable, but capable of being consistently a top scorer in the game, I don't know, man.
Sean Payton appeared on Good Morning Football on NFL Network today and didn't really hide his intentions for his quarterback room next season, especially when it comes to Jameis Winston.
He was a tremendous leader for this team, and that's hard to do when you come in new in free agency your first year as a backup quarterback. So that'll be, you know, an important check mark for us. And, you know, a lot of times you want to hold your cards closer to the vest, and he is a free agent. But him along with Taysom Hill, who's in the building, we've said it all along, you know, we're going to develop and coach those guys. And Jameis is one of those guys that we have a big interest in.
Yeah, so Winston's a priority, but you still get the Taysom Hill mention in there. Buy or sell, you're confident Jameis Winston will be on the Saints next season?
I'm lukewarm confident. And
buy!
Only because if the Saints want him, it's a place that makes sense for Winston. There is an opening. There is a job. The only guy you got to beat out is Taysom Hill. And the belief, at least, we'll see whether it's the reality, is that Sean Payton is some kind of quarterback guru. I mean, do you really want to go to the Patriots and fail there? I wouldn't.
Yeah, no, it seems the safest place, yeah. Frankly.
Or the Bears. That's a joke.
Yeah, no.
Bear joke for you, Tom.
Not there. Jared Goff is still processing his move to Detroit and the unraveling of his role as the Rams franchise quarterback. He told Sam Farmer of the LA Times yesterday, quote, "That's the tough part right now, is trying to figure out when did that happen. Those are all conversations that I may or may not have and try to figure it out. That's the conversation to have," end quote. Goff also told Farmer he was disappointed and upset to have been traded. Buy or sell, Goff has a right to be upset about the way things ended with the Rams.
Sure, he's a human being.
Buy.
It's a humiliation. It's a failure. And we're going to find out whether or not he was the problem or McVay was the problem. It's going to be really interesting to watch Goff versus his expectations in Detroit versus Stafford versus his expectations in L.A. But I understand. It doesn't mean that the Rams are wrong, but I understand Goff's reaction.
And we'll end here. It's a little bit of a bummer, but just to update something I brought up earlier in the week, all competition at six Australian Open tune-up events scheduled for Thursday, the upcoming day, was called off after a person working at one of the tournament's Melbourne quarantine hotels tested positive for COVID-19. Players now preparing for the Grand Slam itself, which is supposed to start on Monday, must isolate at their hotels and get a negative test before they will be cleared to participate in the tournament. Buy or sell, they went for too much too soon holding the Australian Open with fans this year.
No, yeah, for fans, yes.
Bye.
Clearly. I bet Djokovic is real happy. He's been really in a good headspace with the authorities at the Australian Open. Yeah. I can't wait. I mean, when the Super Bowl gets done, and I love the NBA, but there's not a lot to watch.
I was so excited. I was so excited for the fans to be there, too, and I was on board, and now it's just like, woof.
It certainly feels like an error in judgment. Though I understand the pressures, right? I mean, revenue is revenue. Whatever any of us do for a living, we want to be successful. We want to make money. We want to feel like we're in a business that can continue to employ us. And those businesses got to make cash.
And if you're clear, you're clear. You know, Southern Australia was looking good. Zero cases. The problem is you're bringing people now in from all kinds of other places to come to this tournament, and you're putting yourself at risk again.
I mean, can you imagine if there's an outbreak of serious nature in Australia because of this Open?
I don't want
to. That's why they have to be. That's why Djokovic's just like, stop, bro. Stop. Like, pull a stew and just play video games in your hotel room or something. Come on. I'm so mean. Thanks for hanging out. Appreciate you. We got Trez Paylor on the program tomorrow. I'm Bill Ryder. Hope to see you back here. Thanks for being with us on CBS Sports Radio.